And you're listening to Radio Regent. This is Mally, aka DocuVixen, and we're back. This is Saturday Morning Live, and we're back in the studio, which is really exciting. Anyway, we're going to go straight, like we do every week. We start with Mamia Abu Jamal.
For Lynn, dear sisters, brothers, and friends, we come today not merely to celebrate the life and contributions of a remarkable person. We gather together to preserve her, her ability to fight the enemy of her life, cancer. That means we can, if we try, keep her with us longer in a better quality of life than that occasioned by the BOP's medical center in Carswell, Texas. I talk here of money, the material stuff that makes this wish manifest. I speak of the meaning of Lynn Stewart, no longer a lawyer perhaps, but still a teacher, hopefully for generations to come. We need her to teach us about the law, how it really is. We need her to teach us about the corruption of the law, again, how it really is. We need her to teach us about her life and struggle against the empire. And for that, we need your help. Contact the Lynn Stewart Support Committee and her family, and let her know how much you love her. Thank you. On Reconstruction. Dear fellow students, I thank you and your professor, Dr. Fernandez, for this brief opportunity to share some time with you as you study what I think was the pivotal point in time for the United States, Reconstruction. Most of us spend little time and perhaps less thought on this period, for, let's face it, it's ancient history, right? I can hear the rolling of eyes, the sucking sounds of mouths, the closing of minds, snapping shut, and the whispered thought, what does this have to do with me, all this stuff from the 1870s and 1880s? But Reconstruction is more than a word historians attach to an era. It was, for the first time in American life, a real attempt to change America's trajectory from a slave nation to a truly free nation. And that brave, noble attempt ended in failure and betrayal. Reconstruction, formally, refers to the years 1866 to 1876. Other historians and authors differ on these dates. These dates are bookmarks in time for when Congress began passing what were called the Reconstruction Acts, which became the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution and supportive legislation, and the Congressional Presidential Deal that made Rutherford B. Hayes president on the condition that the U.S. Army be removed from Southern Territory, exposing African Americans to a deluge of white terrorism, most often organized by an army of the Democratic Party known as the Ku Klux Klan. Some will argue in protest that the South was defeated by the military power of the North, and while true, it doesn't tell all of the story. For what the military wins in the field, politicians can deal away at the table of negotiations. That's what happened in the Hayes-Tilden Compromise of 1876, when the Democratic candidate, Samuel Tilden, seemed to land more votes than Hayes. A congressional committee was established, and the Electoral College gave Hayes one more vote than Tilden. Hayes took the presidency and fulfilled a campaign promise to pull out the U.S. Army, actually tens of thousands of black troops, and Reconstruction came to a dirty, brutal end. In the recent book, The Day Freedom Died, The Colfax Massacre, The Supreme Court, and the Betrayal of Reconstruction by Charles Lane, we see clearly how all levels of government turned their faces from African Americans and left them to the cruel, tender mercies of their former tormentors and enslavers of the white South. Lane writes, instead of a new civil war, there had been a new compromise, a grand bargain between the white Republicans of the North and the white Democrats of the South. The latter had traded the presidency to the former in return for control over their own states. And that meant control of their colored population, because the Supreme Court had decreed that the Negroes must look first to the states for protection against violence and fraud. They must look to the likes of Wade Hampton and Francis Nichols. These were notorious racists. The Compromise of 1877 was less formal than the Missouri Compromise or the Compromise of 1850, but its basic logic was similar. The Union was to be preserved at the risk of the rights of 4 million Americans of African descent. The Negro, the nation opined, will disappear from the field of national politics. Henceforth, the nation, as a nation, will have nothing more to do with him. Reconstruction was over. Charles Lane then adds a final observation. Quote, "The South pushed on Republican fault lines until they cracked. The Confederate States of America lost the Civil War militarily and economically, but in the ways that mattered most to white Southerners, socially, politically, and ideologically, the South did not. Ulysses S. Grant, then President of the United States, died on July 23, 1885, having tried but failed to secure the new birth of freedom for which he had fought the Civil War." Because the U.S. government ceded the issue of states' rights, or local power and control, for all intents and purposes, the South won the war to treat black people as slaves in everything but name. When a civil rights bill was passed in 1875, it would take less than 10 years for the Supreme Court to strike it down. Black people were free according to the Constitution, but in reality, their lives were virtually indistinguishable from that of their captive ancestors, or even themselves. They could not vote. They could not hold office. They could not take certain jobs or professions. They were denied the right to travel from what used to be plantations. They were betrayed, and it would take a century to rebuild movements of the 1960s for voting rights, for so-called freedom. For the South had won the war politically, which they lost on the fields of Gettysburg. Thank you. Olympics of fear. Not in decades have we seen the whipping up of fear as we do today during the Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, Russia. So-called black widows are a threat, as is toothpaste, for the former refers to women who aren't black, members of the disenfranchised ethnic minorities of old Russia. The latter refers to a supposed plot to use toothpaste, Tuzab's explosives. I said decades. Perhaps I should have said generations. A year ago, Russian intelligence informed their U.S. counterparts that nationalists from the area called Chechnya were planning an attack in the U.S. The Americans all but ignored this warning, and the bombing of the Boston Marathon shook them from their lethargy. Perhaps these new warnings are also true, but they have a flavor, a hint of the old rivalry that was the very essence of the Cold War, perhaps. But overreaction is sometimes as dangerous as underreaction, for the toxin of fear permeates societies. Fear is the fuel of repressive governments, and sometimes it can lead to social consequences that do deep and lasting damage to a nation. Since 9/11, that fear has given birth to a colder, more narrow judiciary, just as it did decades ago with the so-called war on drugs. There is a war, but it's against Americans, most of whom are African American, Latino, or poor. And the war is waged by words spat by biased judges and obedient juries to send tens of thousands of people to lifetimes in prison because of a chemical they put in their own bodies. There is a war because of the cold indifference of politicians, the fear of judges, and the willingness of jurors to follow bad laws. It, like the war on terror, is already lost.
North Carolina burning. They call it Moral Mondays, and in North Carolina, this means a movement of civil disobedience led by Reverend Dr. William Barber, a local head of the NAACP. Why protest? That's because for the first time since 1870, yeah, that's right, 1870, the Republicans have their hands on all the levers of power there, the governor's office and both houses of the legislature, and they're on a tear to keep it. One of their first efforts was to attack voting rights and similarly redistricting, thus to block voters from the polls and to redraw districts to isolate and weaken those who make it through to vote. They've slashed unemployment benefits to some 170,000 people, so much so that they no longer qualify for federal unemployment programs. North Carolina is the eighth state to cut such benefits. Social programs have also been hit, and that's just the beginning. And so, demonstrations at the Capitol have attracted hundreds of protesters. Nearly 1,000 people have been arrested in Raleigh, proving that we aren't as far as we think from the civil rights days. It is one of the ironies of history that a party built on black suffrage and black freedom has now become one designed and determined to strip blacks from the voting rolls. Despite the people in the streets and over 900 arrests, national coverage is slight and fleeting. Perhaps that may be because they're so busy covering 50-year anniversaries featuring Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King instead of what's happening now right beneath their noses. You may not see it or hear of it, but a movement is blossoming in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's called Moral Mondays. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.